a fallout shelter somewhere under Seattle, Washington, it's the show you've been waiting for. Get ready to join your hosts, John and Kendrick, as they talk comics, movies, and more. Now here's Spoiler Country!
Hey, if you're listening to our show for the first time and you're on one of the social medias that we're on, like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, any of those kinds of things, you should always check us out on scpod.net. But if you want to keep up with our latest episodes, you should bring out your smartphone, get into your favorite podcatcher, find Spoiler Country, and hit subscribe. Then you'll get all our new stuff.
And if you want to reach out to us, you can do that in two ways. You can call us, leave us a voicemail at 707-656-2080. Again, 707-656-2080. Or you can shoot us an email at spoilercountry@gmail.com.
Oh, United Armies of the Spoilerverse, welcome back to Spoiler Country. I'm Kenny Green, and that is Mr. Horsley. And today on the show, we have another amazing interview with our man on the street, Casey T. Allen. And this time, he's got Brom Revell of IDW fame.
Yeah, the guy's currently working on the Turtles with them and doing some interesting stuff over there.
Yeah, he's working on the female turtle, the girl turtle.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to get too much into it, but I don't want to say Casey and me, but Casey and us, you know, you and Jeff and everybody came up with some really interesting questions for them to ask about this new turtle they're bringing into the fold.
Yeah, it's really cool. Just before we get into this interview, we just want to give a big shout out to IDW and Nickelodeon for making this possible, because this is a great opportunity.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity and a fun interview, and anytime we get a chance to talk about the Turtles on the show, even though I wasn't on the interview, I enjoy promoting more Turtle stuff because I love the Turtles myself.
Yeah, we're pretty Turtle-centric.
I mean, it's funny because we are in a roundabout way. Like, Kelly's like, my wife, it's always like, you don't like the Turtles? I'm like, no, I grew up with the Turtles. I love those things. I read the comics. I had the toys. I had literally all the toys.
Literally just bought a ton of Turtle toys. Old school turtle toys from 1988, 1989, just like a year and a half ago.
I did. And one of the first comic books I ever got was from my uncle, was Turtles number 2, the old school series, which was very different than the cartoon I was watching at the time.
Yeah.
And I love the movies as a kid, you know, I was all into it, and I like it. So
yeah,
it's good.
And I love the Turtles from Mirage Studios putting them out. And I don't remember who got them after that, because I never got the big magazine size ones that were.
It was Archie after Mirage, I'm pretty sure.
Oh wow! So I got the normal. So I got number four, five, six. I bought off the actual stand, you know,
nice,
as they came out. And I don't think I never had number one or number two. If I did, they were reprints, time reprints.
I think I had a number. I had a number one, second or third. I think I had a third print of number one at some point.
Yeah. It's always exciting to talk to anybody that's on working with the Turtles. So why don't we just let Brom talk in his own words?
There we go.
Hello everyone, welcome to Spoiler Country. My name is Casey Allen, and today we are talking to Ninja Turtles writer Brom Revell. Brom, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good, thanks for having me.
Awesome. Okay, so you are in Italy right now. How's that?
It's good. It's not my first time. My wife is Italian, so we're here for the holidays. But yeah, it puts us pretty far apart time-wise.
I can imagine. So the other day on Twitter, I saw someone post pictures of a pear salad that their aunt brought to their family Christmas that no one ate. It consisted of pears, copious amounts of mayonnaise, and cherries. I can imagine no pear salads at the holiday Christmas family get-togethers in Italy. I can imagine that the food is amazing and everyone left feeling miserable.
Yes, from the food, because you eat too much. But I guess that's what happens everywhere. But here, I think it's even more so. They multiple courses, you always eat too much at the beginning, and then by the time you get to like the third or fourth chorus, you're like, no more, you know?
No mas.
So and then you want to save room for the desserts too, because there's always going to be like tiramisu or whatever. So it's tough. You got to really, the first time around, you never do it right. So you got to like strategize and like pace yourself. It's all about pacing yourself.
And really, okay. So as a former professional competitive eater, there's nothing. There's so much to be said about strategy. I can say I'm professional because I won twice and I got paid. So,
all right.
I had a friend tell me one time that if you get paid to do something, you're a professional. So, as the man that ate 16 double decker moon pies for a state fair competition and won $100, I can say with authority that when you go into a situation that there's going to be a lot of food consumed, you really have to plot it out beforehand. And yeah, if you don't, you're just shooting yourself in the foot.
So you're prepared for every Christmas, every holiday gathering.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Don't,
you know
what
you're doing.
Don't give me any of that stupid fruitcake or anything. No, I'm going straight for the Buckeyes. The Buckeyes are where it's at. They're heavy. They're really, really tasty. And who doesn't love peanut butter and chocolate?
Of course.
In addition,
well, actually, my wife, she thinks peanut butter is disgusting.
I hurt for you, man.
I know. It's hard to get peanut butter out here.
So, so tell me what you do art and writing. So, how long have you been involved with comics?
Well, I don't know. I mean, the origin story, I've always kind of wanted to do comics for a long time. Like I went to an art high school in San Francisco. I'm from San Francisco, and they had like one of those magnet type schools where, you know, you can, it had art and or had like visual arts and dance and acting and music and all this stuff. So like from an early stage, I was like, that was kind of my focus, and I went to art school afterwards, but I went to like more of a classic art school, not like a comic, not, they didn't have a comic curriculum. So yeah. I was kind of like learning like art adjacent. And I would say that starting out, like, you know, when you're young, the idea is like, oh, I want to be a penciler. And then as I kind of kept going, then I was like, well, I kind of want to just do my own art. And then as I kept going, I was kind of like, well, I kind of want to just write my own stuff, you know, like, so the art kind of always came first, and I came around to, the writing aspect of it. And, starting out after school, I got hooked up with a director in New York. I went to school in New York, and we did, I was kind of doing pre-production stuff. I did a few like comics that were like comics of the movie type thing, adaptations that were kind of more promotional stuff, but I was at least able to you know, practice the craft a little. But I still was kind of like adjacent to the comic industry. Like most of this stuff wasn't really coming out in comic book stores. It was kind of, would be hard to find. And so I was kind of making comics, but I wasn't really like in the industry. And finally, at a certain point, I was like, I had the idea for a book that I wanted to do, and I was like, I gotta like do this. And so I kind of took some time off and made Gorillas, which like as in guerrilla warfare, which was a book that I wrote and drew that came out originally from Image, and then I moved it over to Oni because at Image I started putting it out as issues, and it wasn't really gonna survive that way. So then I turned it into like graphic novels, like volumes. And slowly over the past, I don't know, 10 years, I put out 4 volumes of that through Oni. And from that, I kind of, you know, snuck into the industry. And I've had other little jobs with different companies here and there doing different stuff, work for hire stuff. First as, well, I guess both as writer and artist on a few different things. Back in 2014, I did a Marvel Knights thing for Marvel X-Men when they kind of rebooted that one of these times, and I wrote and drew that. And I've been doing a few things here and there for IDW, for the Turtles, and I don't know what else. A few covers here and there.
And that's why we're talking now. You're doing the Mutant Ninja Turtles comic, and taking Jenica in her own little thing. Mm-hmm. So can I ask you, like, how old are you?
I'm 42.
42? So we're roughly around the same age.
Uh-huh.
Were you of that age that when Turtles hit, when it hit big?
Yeah, basically. The Ninja Turtles were kind of really one of the things that got me into the comic book store. Because it's interesting. I'm trying to remember the chronology of it for me, because I actually found the Ninja Turtles before they really hit. I remember
the Eastman and Laird.
At that point, I was like getting into role playing games a little, and Palladium put out a Ninja Turtles role playing game.
Oh wow!
Yeah, and so me and a couple friends like got that book and were like super into it, and we're playing it. And then, like, as I recall, the animation came out a few, like, I don't know, it's hard to remember time when you're young, but like a little later, like, because I remember us being like excited for it before it happened. And then I think from there it got me into the comic book store, and then I was getting the black and white Eastman and Laird ones, the ones that I could find, because even at that point, you know, the early ones had been sold out, but there was still, like, you know, I think I got a number one printing or something, seventh printing, sixth printing, and so I started voraciously collecting those. But then once you get into the comic book store, then you're like, oh, who's this guy with claws in his hands? And, you know, this looks interesting. And so from there, it was like Wolverine and the X-Men. And then, you know, it went on from there. I mean, and I should also say, like, earlier in life, I did have, like, some access to, you know, some Disney, old Disney comics. And my mom would get me Tintins and Asterix.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, when I was younger, that was part of, like, my early, like, reading. But then, you know, I hadn't really been in a comic book store. Those were all, like, comics from, like, bookstores, you know? And then once you get in a comic book store, it's, like, a whole nother world.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, then after that, that's, like, around that period is when I was like, I want to do this.
Yeah.
I want to draw these things.
So, you're doing the Turtles for IDW. Mm-hmm. And what's your creative process with this? Do you write full script or in plot summary? And it's has your background with film kind of informed how you do your job?
Yeah. I mean, I think these days, like, everyone in mainstream comics has film as a pretty major influence. You can see that comics these days have gotten more filmic than they were, say, in the Silver Age, like the Kirby,
oh, yeah,
Lee days. You know, I mean, things have gotten much more cinematic in general. So yes, I think that's a big influence. But in terms of the creative process, I don't normally write full scripts. I kind of start out by figure out the scenes, slowly break it down. What are the scenes going to be? And then within the scenes, what are the beats that I want to hit? And then if action is the important thing, then the beats are foremost. And if it's a dialogue heavy scene, then those beats also, like, are kind of like, you know, dialogue driven. And most of this I would probably do just freehand, just like writing, you know, on sheets of paper. And then that would be good enough for me to start working from. Because then I can continue, since I'm also writing it, I work digitally. So I can put the bubbles on there and, like, put the words in, move them around, and like add stuff if as the page develops or whatever. But since now I'm working with a publisher, they need to see what's going to happen more clearly, and also we need to get scripts approved by Nickelodeon because that's the parent company. So for this, then I go kind of the extra step and put it into a fairly full script form so that other people it makes sense for. But even at that stage, it's probably not as full of a script as if I were working with another artist. I keep my descriptions pretty brief, just enough that you kind of know what's happening, just for brevity's sake, because I'm not trying to write a novel. I'm trying to, like, you know, get the script into their hands so that we can, like, jump to the next step in the process.
I hear you.
So yeah, it kind of fluctuates, depending on, you know, if I'm working for myself or for, a company or an editor that needs to see things more clearly. But it's both semi unnecessary, but also I can admit that it does help a little to go that extra step, because it just, every new step in the process helps clarify things. I mean, you're kind of starting out with something that's pretty a nebulous idea that you're really trying to shape into something specific. So when you add steps like making a full script, it does help because it makes it a little more real.
I understand. Yeah. So when you're doing these comics for IDW, as opposed to doing your own work, you have a certain amount of pages in which to do the story. You can't kind of just go like, oh, this looks like a, you know, 48-page story. This looks like a 23-page story or whatever. Is it harder to write the chapter beats with the comics, knowing that you have those page restrictions?
In some ways, yes, I think. I don't know. In some ways, yes. In some ways, no. I actually much prefer having the openness of like a graphic novel format, where you can have as many burn as many pages as you want and use pages in different ways. I mean, you can use a double page spread for, you know, something that's maybe for a quiet scene maybe, or, you know, like you can use the space in different ways without having to worry about specifically, you know, page counts. On the other hand, you know, restrictions always sometimes can be good creatively. I'm in another country right now. So yeah, I mean, it's kind of a different style of writing. You're also writing for these kind of, what do you call it? Cliffhangers. And yeah, I mean, yeah, that's a big part of it is pacing and figuring out your, like when you're doing a 20 page comic, you got to figure out how to fit it in there, what to give this valuable page space time for, and but also how to keep the pacing and the rhythm still nice. I was a huge fan of the Akira manga, which has amazing action sequences and amazing pacing, and it has time for, like, it'll give a whole page for him to just, you know, like, you know, he falls down some stairs during a chase scene and that's a whole page. You know, I like that. I like being able to have that space, but it's kind of it's almost a different medium, you know, like I'm actually struggling. Like, I have a creator-owned idea that I was gonna be pitching before I got this, that I was like kind of batting back and forth whether or not I wanted to do it as issues or as a graphic novel. Like, I think industry-wise, it's really good to have it as an issues, because you can, you know, every month it comes out, every month it's relevant. People have more of a chance to find it and get on board. And then, you know, it gets collected and it's in that form as well. So then it gets to be on the shelf and be found So it's just out there more. When you come out with a graphic novel, it's kind of out there, and if it doesn't like snap up people's interest in the first month or two, it's kind of just sitting on a shelf and doesn't have the same visibility. But it's a little more restrictive in terms of storytelling. You're kind of locked into these specific chunks that have to have a satisfying story within that chunk, and also have a kind of somewhat of a cliffhanger that makes you want to buy the next one. So it's kind of its own medium in a certain way.
Okay, so how did you end up getting involved with IDW and TMNT?
Well, the editor, Bobby Kernow, actually, I've never said his name out loud, so I'm not sure if it's Kernow or Kernow. He contacted me after seeing my creator-owned book a long time ago, and I would say around 2012, and was always kind of, would check in with me every once in a while and be like, do you want to like try to write for us? Do you want to try to do a one shot or something? And I was always into it, but it never really happened. Like, maybe there'd be a few people that they were like talking about, and I don't know, the Nickelodeon would kind of pick someone else or something. This happened. He check in a few times over the years. Eventually I did like a variant cover for the first time. And then, I think the first thing I might've done was actually, I did a backup feature for TMNT Universe, which was about Jenica, kind of. It was four page installments over the course of four issues, and I wrote and drew it. And it was at a time when Jenica was still relatively new, but was kind of becoming more of the part of the main continuity. And so it made sense to like kind of do something about her, because at the time her past was kind of, bare. Like we didn't really know much about her other than like she used to be Shredder's kind of assassin. And that kind of she just popped up, and there was no real history behind her. So I was kind of just given the option to like, do you want to do something with her? Do you want to like try to fill in some gaps? And so I did. And that was kind of the first thing I did for them. And then over the years, I did a few other fill-ins, some in the major continuity. And then I did a Donatello macro one-shot. And then Jenica started becoming more of a important figure until she became a new turtle. And so that, I think that's a big part of why I was asked to then do this, because I had already kind of started to develop her past. So it made some sense that I would maybe continue to build around that.
And the drama behind that character is, I mean, there's so much you can do with that, because, I mean, it's really, really ripe for interpretation and all kinds of interesting things to just play around with. It's kind of like, I don't know, kind of heartbreaking what's happened to her.
Right. Yeah. It's weird because you do feel bad for her, but because she started out as a human, like you almost view the Ninja Turtles differently too, because they never really started out as humans. I mean, in this version of it, they're kind of like reincarnated, right? Or they're like their bodies were kind of transferred, or their souls were kind of transferred into these creatures from ancient feudal Japan. But they weren't really ever. It doesn't feel like they were humans who lost their humanity.
Yeah.
But for her, she really is, and she's got a very complex past. Even like before what I added to it, just the fact that she started out as a foot soldier and then kind of came around and then was with Splinter when Splinter was kind of being, kind of a different version of Splinter than we know him from the past. And then now being incorporated into the main turtle kind of family, it's an interesting, like, it's interesting to think about the psychology that would get someone to become a foot soldier, and then, but then also, like, have the, I don't know, humanity to become a, you know, get down with the more, with the turtles and Splinter and yeah, I think that it's, I think she's a very fascinating character. And also it's interesting to have someone in comics that isn't so super defined already. Like when I worked on the X-Men book, it was very hard to work with characters who'd been around for that long and had been so overwritten, you know, like through the past. Like,
oh yeah.
What do you do with these characters who've been written like thousands and thousands of times? Like, what's new? And how can you really change them? You can't really change them too much. They kind of have to end up being the same characters at the end. So it's difficult, but she actually has enough space that you have room to create. You
know? Yeah, you're forming that character as opposed to going into the toy box and breaking all the toys, which was
right.
What you could possibly doing if you're messing with an already established character, you're building the toy, which is has to be very rewarding. Just as an artist, as a writer, just being able to take something that did not exist and then make it so. That's always fascinating for me. What type of research did you do to prepare for your stint on the Turtles?
Well, honestly, not much. I had for the backup story I did that was kind of went into some of Jenica's past. I had done some research on like feudal Japan and ninjas and general, you know, this kind of stuff, because I was kind of playing with a few different things, like one thing's happened visually, but then there's like a voiceover that's kind of talking about like what it means to be a ninja, and it kind of went into like how ninjas were used in the past and how they were different from, say, samurais, and how they used, you know, their code of honor was different. Samurais had this Bushido code that was very like, you know, you're not allowed to do certain things, whereas ninjas were kind of like, by all means necessary, you can do whatever you want. So it kind of was reflecting what was happening visually. So for that I did, and the more I've worked for the Turtles, the more I've caught up with the main storyline. I probably haven't read all of the issues because they're up to 100 now. But at least for the last 30 or 40, I'm up to date. And then I also know like some of the main important storylines of like how they got turned into, you know, how they came to be in the version of it. So I feel like I'm pretty up to date with most of the characters. Every once in a while, someone pops up and I'm like, who's this? But I'm pretty up to date with the current storyline. And for this storyline that I'm doing now, since it's kind of based on, I'm kind of like jumping off from what I did in that backup story, because that was kind of the first frame of reference of something that happened to Jenica before, I kind of get to make it up. So I don't really need to be too reliant on other stuff. So I felt pretty up to date, at least reference wise about what I needed. It was more just figuring out the story beats and making sure it all makes sense as writing normally is.
Oh yeah. So what qualities differentiate her from the other turtles other than the, you know, the obvious, it's a girl turtle.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I feel like since she's been a blank slate a little bit, that maybe different people have different impressions of her. But for me, it's always been this kind of there's a little bit of uncertainty with her. Like, she's not completely completely self-confident yet, in the way that I think the rest of the turtles are. I mean, everyone has doubts now and again, but for her, I think she's the fact that she had allowed herself to become an assassin for Shredder, but also has this kind of humanity. You know, that says something to me about, like, her, I don't know, being able to be misled a little bit, but still having the person that we know of her is not someone who's particularly, mean-spirited or anything close to what you would call as evil. She's just been led astray before. And I think she's in a good place now where she's, found some kind of peace. But I think that's still an element of her personality that she has to deal with a little bit now and again. And so I touch on that in the backup story I did and then continuing to go down that road a little bit here. And that even adds to this now that she's a turtle and someone who's, dealt with that in the past, that's a good way for that to come back to this kind of uncertainty, like, of, do I want to be a turtle? How do I feel about this? How am I going to deal with this? Like, this kind of uncertainty. And also, I think it goes into the larger picture of, how women are dealt with in society in general, in terms of, being asked to be certain or being expected to be certain things, certain ways. And if that doesn't, if their personality doesn't necessarily fit in this kind of classic mold of what a woman should be, how they deal with it, how they're reflected in media and other things, So I touch on that in the upcoming story as well.
Do you think that she would strive to find a cure for her mutation, or is she just going to just have to figure out what it is to be a turtle and redefine for herself what her humanity is?
Yeah, I think it's something that is a good question, because I think there's things that she would, obviously there's good and bad that comes with it. I mean, she definitely views herself as a ninja and as a, someone who's fighting for something. And when she's now stronger and she's maybe more fit to be a warrior, but she's lost a lot of her humanity too. I think that's a question that gets touched upon, and I don't know if I have a cut and dry answer. I think it's something that she would very possibly want to go back to, but I think it's also something that she's trying not to reject completely. We all try to accept ourselves for what we are, and I think she's trying to do that as she is now. But given the chance to go back, I think it's possible she would, but you never know. The situation could be different. If she had that chance, I'm sure in a story, she it wouldn't be so easy,
Oh, yeah.
If she was able to get the cure, it would probably be meaning, something else terrible would happen if she did get the cure. So, I think it's probably something that's going to be dealt with more. I don't know for sure. I don't know what's really coming, but I definitely touch upon it on my story, and I would assume that this playing with this idea of whether or not she's going to be able to go back to normal will definitely be something that's explored. But I don't know what's going to happen.
And I
can tell you this: at the end of my series, she most likely will still be a turtle. I haven't been given the carte blanche to just completely turn her back into a human.
And I mean, honestly, like, IDW, Nickelodeon, all those people, I'm sure, have a vested interest in her maintaining her turtleness. But the drive behind that for a character is like almost Shakespearean in nature. There's so many great stories that have been told that that have a character that has been, I mean, in comics even, you have the Thing from the Fantastic Four.
Right, yeah.
Who this man, this monster, that that comic, it was just such a massive tragedy to be have the very foundation of who you are completely and totally just changed forever. Everything is different now. Now you have to deal with it. And that's right. Such a...
It's the perfect metaphor because, we all feel like monsters sometimes. That's why everyone can relate with Frankenstein's monster more than Frankenstein. And that's why the mutants in X-Men were so great because, it's at that time period, it was kind of like the teenagers who were reading mostly, but it doesn't even matter. But like in that time period, you're going through all these changes, right? And this is this perfect metaphor where, there's benefits to the changes, but then there's also like this aspect of having to deal with this new person you're growing into. And I'm not sure if you've read Black Hole by Charles Burns.
I've read a little bit of it, and it's fantastic. Yes.
Yeah, it's amazing, and that's a similar thing. There's like a little like teenage sexually transmitted plague that's going around that's turning people into like mutants, like physical mutants, and it makes so much sense for that period of life, like having where you so many kids do feel like they're turning into monsters or like that they're rejected or and a big part of it is having to accept who you are and find the strength in these changes. So it's a great metaphor that's been used and will continue to be used, but I think it fits right into what I always was imagining of her character, even before she became a turtle. Like, when I was doing these backup story, I think it was like 2 years ago, maybe. I think it was 2015, maybe 2015, 2016. At that point, I don't think even IDW knew that they were going to turn her into a turtle. That was a few years ago. So, it just made sense for her character, and I think it continues to make sense. And it's one of the things that makes her a fascinating character to both write but also to read.
And, people are going nuts for it, and she's getting her own miniseries, which is, I'm sure that speaks a lot to the character and how people are perceiving it already. So that's pretty amazing. So in prior appearances, Jenica had a relationship with Casey Jones, which, being a Casey myself, that's who I was on the playground we had our Ninja Turtle time, which was cool, but also feel like I'm much more of a Donatello man myself. So it's kind of a bummer being named after being named the same name as a Ninja Turtles character when you really don't want to be that guy. So, but anyway,
you could be named Donatello.
I'm for it though.
You would have to go through life as a Donatello.
He was my dude. And there, it seems like there's a little bit of a gravitas that you have with that name already. And, I mean, what do you have as Casey? You have Casey Jones and the Casey at the Bat.
Yeah, Casey at the Bat.
Yeah, and Casey at the Bat lost. And then if you're Casey Jones, you have to like the Grateful Dead, which is...
Is he a deadhead? That didn't come up in my research.
Oh no. There's a song by the Grateful Dead called Casey.
Oh, okay.
So, will the relationship between Jenica and Casey Jones be explored in the series?
I touch upon it a little bit. It's kind of he makes a brief appearance, but it's more of like a a motivation kind of than an integral part of my storyline. I think that I'm not exactly certain what IDW wants to do moving forward. I know it's a kind of a tricky subject since it's interspecies at this point. yeah, but I think it does. It's a good example of her having to come to terms with this before and after. You know, like something that was happening in her life before, which now doesn't have the same possibility to move forward with, and something that was lost, one of the things that were lost, and yeah, something that is obviously for her one of those things that would probably make her want to return to her old form, and probably makes it difficult to move forward. Now, what's also interesting is what they did, you know, is a few issues later, they set off this mutagen bomb and threw a whole community into, made them all mutants. So I think that's a very interesting thing, too, because although she has turned into a mutant, she's not like one of the only mutants anymore. Now she's part of a community of mutants. So it's not as lonely as it could have been.
She's
part of a larger group of people who are also dealing with it. And I think based on her, like where her personality has come over the years, that she really wants to help these people, and she does feel a connection to them because she's going through the same thing. So I think that's another thing that is interesting to examine a little, is that, you know, she does feel this connection to this community that she's now trying to help and help move forward. And if she had the chance to maybe get the cure, would she do it if only she could do it? Like, you know, if it wasn't the whole community that was also being able to go back to normal, that might be something that would delay her too, because, you know, she does have connection with them now, and she does want to help them. And I think it's a very cool thing that whoever's idea it was to move forward with this idea of like kind of breaking mutants out in a larger way. I think it's a cool. I'm very excited to see what's going to happen in the main continuity. So for my story, one of the things I wanted to also explore beyond just her was how the rest of this community has been affected.
I'm just thinking, you know, if you're a tall guy, I have a friend who's 6'7".
Oh, yeah.
Everybody that he talks to goes, "Oh, you must be great at basketball." Poor right. guy yeah. is awful yeah. at basketball. He,
I'm 6'4", so I'm like borderline. I'm not like freakishly tall, but like I'm definitely usually the tallest guy in the
yeah,
room.
Yeah, and so you're used to people saying, "Oh, you must be great at sports. You must be good."
Right, yeah.
I'm imagining.
How's the weather up there?
Exactly. So I'm imagining the poor guy who just got caught up in this mutagen and is now transformed completely into a turtle, and the base of reference people have for people that are also turtles are the Ninja Turtles, who are ninjas right, yeah. first and yeah, foremost, yeah. but also turtles. How terrible must it be to be that guy who, I'm actually an accountant. I do not know how to do ninja stuff. I'm a ninja with numbers.
Well, yeah, it's like also not everyone gets the coolest animal, you know, like sometimes you turn into like a cool puma mutant, and then sometimes you're just like a sloth.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, now I'm super slow. You know? So it's not like it's all beneficial for everyone. You know,
I mean, we at least have knowledge that you can be a rat and be pretty amazing as a mutant person.
Right.
But yeah, trying to think of the lamest animal you could be.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah. But also, you know, maybe you're just like a normal sized guy, and then you're half giraffe. I mean, there's no real rhyme or reason for it, or at least there hasn't been described like what attributes in a person might draw out, you know, into their animal self. Maybe it's their spirit animals that just come through.
Yeah, yeah.
it's kind of fun to think about, especially when you're sitting there drawing backgrounds, just people.
Oh, I bet.
Like, what other animal can I just throw in there? It's fun. Sometimes I just start out with shapes, and then I'm like, okay, this is kind of a square head. Where are we going with you? And it's like, okay, now you're I don't know, you're an aardvark. It's like, because I don't want to be like too basic or too like generic and make everyone just these kind of semi furry things. I want to be like specific, like that guy's an aardvark, that guy's a a weasel, that guy's a chipmunk.
And
I like it, though. It's fun. And it's fun to draw because, I don't know, like humans are kind of hard to draw. but now I'm in a world full of animals, and I can kind of play with shapes a little more, be a little more abstract in some ways, and it's kind of fun.
I'm just thinking, you know, the poor guy who's mutated as a wombat is he can only pick cubes. That's his superpower,
right?
Because
and it's funny because I did go back and find that that role playing game book, which, I mean, in that book, it's kind of like a world of mutants, not a world of mutants, but like, obviously, if your character is a mutant, so they have this whole, you know, in creating the character, you can kind of like roll for different, you know, which type of animal you're going to be. And it breaks things down a little bit. And it's like, oh yeah, there's certain attributes get better for if you're a certain animal, and others maybe worse. And they have a, you know, a big list, and they also had all these secondary books. So it does help. And it's like, when you're a little stuck for like what kind of animals to do, I can kind of reference this list at least as a base thing. And then they also have, it's like you said, like wombats. There was turtles down under. There was turtles.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, there was. Well, and then the main one is just that there's a big amount, and they kind of break down into like farm animals, you know, and animals for Africa, reptiles.
You can honestly say to your bosses at IDW and Nickelodeon, I've been training for this since I was 13, or however old you were when you bought the game.
Probably close to that. Probably 11, 12, 13, in that range. It's funny. It's funny. Because I definitely, you know, that was the beginning, getting into comics. And, you know, you drift away from that. I got more into superhero stuff for a while. Then I got more into, you know, like Love and Rockets and that kind of stuff for a while. You know, you drift around. But then when you come back to like Turtles in this instance, it's very natural. I mean, like I was super there for a long time in my life. And you know, you realize like, oh, I kind of have I already have a pretty like firm idea in my head of what I think the turtle, you know, everyone draws the turtles a little different.
Oh yeah.
And I kind of realized, oh yeah, I kind of already decided what I think the turtles should look like a long time ago, you know, which drawing style I liked them as, or like which head style. So yeah, in that sense, it's true. I kind of have been working on this since I was 13.
And you're, yeah, I mean, it doesn't hurt that your previous creator owned work was dealt with animals.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I wonder if that helped any in them wanting to get me on board. I did put a monkey in this one. I will.
Oh, nice.
But I did. It's not a chimp because I didn't want to go that on the nose. But I made a little like secondary character that was that's a primate that I won't divulge what primate yet. You'll have to go buy the book and see.
I hear
but
you.
But yeah, it's fun. I think it's a good device. I don't know, like, you know, having Animorphs. I mean, it's nothing new. I mean, that's what Disney's been doing for, you know, 70 years, this kind of anthropomorphized animals. This is just a little more, giving it a little more base of reality.
Yes, yes.
But it still makes sense in some way. Like it resonates for people.
So was there any of the negative reaction to Jenica being a turtle that that Venus kind of received back in the live action their show?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with Venus. I mean, I have a vague like, now that you bring it up, I kind of have a vague memory of it, but I don't remember. Like, first of all, I don't really remember her character that much, and then I don't remember the bad reaction to it either, because I don't remember character that much.
It's the internet. People react poorly to so many things.
Yeah, I know.
So,
I feel like with her, I mean, since it's kind of, she was a character already that had a certain amount of, I think people liked her character. I had the impression, I don't go on like message boards or anything and like really figure out what people are really thinking. But my impression was that Jenica was a character that was well liked. And so since that basis was already there and the, I don't know, the story dictated it in a way that made sense. And even now, as the community has, the mutant zone kind of community has grown, also continues to make sense. It doesn't feel to me like it's...
Yeah, you're not just dropping it on somebody's lap.
Right. Like, yeah. We're really, like, doing this to, you know, randomly or just as a marketing ploy, but kind of out of the natural progression of the story. So if that was the feeling of what this Venus character, you know, was getting shit for, I don't know. I don't know that what the situation was, but I feel like at least for Jenica, it seems very much a natural progression. Like it's not necessarily out of left field. She's a character that people were already invested in. And I think in some ways, maybe are more invested in now because it's funny. Like it humanizes her in a way, because you naturally, because of her change from human to mutant and us all being humans, I think you kind of are forced to be like, oh yeah, well, you know, what would it be like if that happened to me, right?
Yeah, you can totally empathize with the character.
Right, and that just makes her a stronger character the more that readers empathize with her. So I think that I don't think that there's going to be a problem with awesome. That.
So
I don't know if there has been.
You have three issues with this miniseries. What are you hoping to explore?
Well, I want it to be, you know, a contained little story for her, first and foremost, which I mean, nice. I guess is kind of obvious because she's, you know, it's her solo adventure. But we're going to definitely touch on her past, is going to kind of come back, and she's going to be kind of pulled back into potentially, you know, people that she's known from her past that maybe were not the best influences. And no, she's moved on from that and, you know, has become a ninja, has become, you know, more self-confident and all this stuff. She's also at this pivotal point where she's just lost some of maybe her self-confidence from being turned. And so, you know, she's maybe able to, also the thing with Casey, with you know, that kind of crumbling around her because of this thing, being able to be pulled back a little bit into some old negative behaviors. And then also examining, like, the rest of the this mutant community, what's happening there, how life has changed for them, how that's a reflection of what's happened to her, and how she wants to deal with that and help with them. And also, yeah, also her learning to do it on her own a little bit, you know, she was a part of the foot, and, you know, that's a very regimented, almost military, style, organization. Then she had, you know, Splinter to be the one to tell her what to do. And then she has the Turtles, but now she's kind of off on her own a little bit, and she doesn't have that, the fallback of being told what to do, but having to make the decisions on her own. So all of that kind of mixed together, and something that plays as a nice little contained adventure, and something also, you know, has bits of action throughout, so that, you know, we don't want just heads talking in boxes.
Yeah. And I was just thinking, I mean, from Case's perspective, I mean, I don't think that too many people here haven't had the situation where, you know, they're back in their old hometown or where they were back in the day. And maybe they're at a restaurant or a gas station. They look across from where they're at and they see their ex.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And they're a turtle now. So.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. 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 I mean, it takes that the awkwardness of that happening, and it just ups
the ante a little bit.
Yeah, because then also on top of that, it's like, oh, there's this awkwardness that, you know, you're a mutant now. You know, that's kind of weird.
I've had some exes that look like whales,
and it's not his fault either. Really, you know, it's a difficult situation for everyone involved, and no one's trying to paint Casey as the bad guy, but we're also like, you know, we're seeing how it's affecting Jen a little bit. And again, I touch on it a little bit early in the first issue, and it's more of kind of just a reminder of what's happening, and then somewhat of a motivation for what she's gonna go on to do.
Awesome.
So it's not integral, but it's definitely something that's bouncing around in the back of her mind for the rest of the miniseries.
Cool. Okay. Well, one more question, if you don't mind. Do you listen to music or anything as you write? Do you have anything going on in the background, or do you have to have it completely quiet, or while you do your thing?
I usually listen to music, but it's usually like soundtracky type stuff.
Okay.
Like stuff without words. Even when I'm drawing, I kind of like to just have stuff that's more like background music. But lately what I've been getting into is a lot of this, like this resurgence of the 80s style soundtracky, like synthy stuff, like synth wavy kind of like stuff that sounds like would have been the soundtrack to some 80s action movie, but is actually,
oh, yeah,
you know, just a pastiche of what people, you know, pastiche of nostalgia. This big like synthy nostalgia stuff. And that's fun for me, because it gives you the vibe of you know, it's not all just like action scenes either. It's like sometimes it's like the scene in the movie that you know, after the person gets broken up with, or the scene at the end of the movie where it's the resolution, or it's the opening scene where something, you know, at least kind of like invented movies, invented scenes, and, you know, invented nostalgia. So I like that stuff. That stuff's easy to just put on and let go. And you kind of, it's kind of background music, but it's also kind of like, I don't know, like a...
Kind of helps you get in the headspace.
Yeah, it gets you in the mood. It gets you in the headspace. And it doesn't even really matter what you're doing. Like if you're doing a quiet scene or action scene, or it kind of all vaguely makes sense. Because it's just such, I don't know, this... pastiche is the best word I can think of. It's just this like kind of generic but specific, and I don't know, but I've been liking that a lot. It's easy for me to just throw that on and forget about it for the day.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've been making Spotify specific playlists for things that I'm doing and when I write, and it's really, you know, conducive to just kind of getting into the spot that I need to be to concentrate on what I'm doing. So I love hearing if other people do the same. So this new mini series, it starts in February and will run till April, correct?
Yeah, it's monthly. So February, March, April, yeah.
Awesome. And do you have anything else coming up after that that we need to know about?
No, I mean, you can go check out my gorilla's creator owned book, recently was collected as an omnibus.
Nice.
So it's a big giant thing that is a complete story all in one now. So
probably stop a burglar there. With it. It's pretty heavy.
Yeah. 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 It's it's definitely could be used as a paperweight. And I was working on my next, creator-owned book, but that's quite a ways from being in stores. So, after that, that would be my next focus, unless something else, you know, more interesting comes along. But for right now, that's what's coming.
Well, anytime you want to come back on the show to promote your next thing that you're working on, dude, bring it. I'd love to have you back, and I've really enjoyed talking to you, man.
Cool, thank you. It was a good podcast.
Thank you. And we'll go ahead and call it right here. Brahm Ravel, thank you so much for coming on to Spoiler Country. I've enjoyed very much talking about the new miniseries, Jenica, TMNT Jenica, and it starts February. So, really excited for that, and man, it looks amazing. So
thanks, man.
All right, well, have a wonderful day, man. Enjoy your holiday. I'm very envious of anyone being in Italy right now. I'm stuck in Alabama, so
yeah, it's fun. I'm gonna go spend New Year's in Milan.
Oh, wow. Nice. Enjoy it. And, take it easy, brother.
All right. Thanks, man.
All right. Goodbye.
Okay. We're back.
Yeah, man. That was fun.
Yeah. That was a lot of fun. And man, how lucky is Brahm to be in Milan? I mean,
that's pretty awesome. I mean, how
we're going to Milan? I mean, right. It's just ridiculous. He's in Italy and just chilling in Italy. You know, no big deal.
I mean, like that's exciting for us, but then you know, realize people just live there. So for them, it's like no big deal because they live there.
Yeah,
it's just,
his wife is from there, so that was really cool.
That's cool, man. Every time we have Casey do an interview, which he usually does interviews at time frames that we can't do it, or there's certain people he wants to talk to that we're like, you know, that's cool. You're a fan of theirs. That's fine. You know, every time I listen to it, I'm like, man, I wish I was on that episode, on that interview. Every time.
I wanted to be on that one, but it just time.
Yeah, the time didn't work out. Yeah. I couldn't do it either.
Next time.
It was just next time. Yeah, I mean, come back on. We'll do it again.
All right, guys. I hope you really enjoyed that. Take a back look at our catalog, or take a look at our back catalog, I guess is a better way to say it. You're going to find a ton of interviews with a ton of cool people. Ones that you wouldn't expect. Eric Larson, Richard Kadrey, Jerry Conway. I mean,
McLeod Andrews.
If you don't know who McLeod Andrews is, I highly recommend going checking that one out.
Yeah, and intermixed with the interviews are a bunch of, you know, episodes or on topics we discuss about, like, recently, you know, we came up with an idea for a Western, or talking about Crisis, or whatever. I mean, we have episodes in between interviews about just random stuff that we want to talk about.
Yeah, I'm super excited for that storyline that we came up with.
Me too. I've been thinking about it nonstop.
If you want to find out more, check out Riders of the Old West episode.
Yeah.
All right, guys, don't forget to open the mind.
Read more. See ya.
Thanks, man. That's way better. No, it is.